two pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 8 show, brought to you by www.south-beach-shopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House and Penn State and Big Ten expert and a tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football, the Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hey, Bill. Good to be on with you, buddy.
What's going on, Bill? How are you, man? Good here.
I'm doing great. We have an awful lot to talk about this week, fellas. Let's get through a couple of these pleasantries, and we will hit this thing hard. What another outstanding weekend of college football that ended at the last game with Notre Dame and Florida State going down to the last play. So we'll get to all that, and we'll cover the whole weekend. Our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, we've got a little change to our routine this week. Go to the Bill Furman Facebook page rather than the Philly Press Box Facebook page. That's the one with the Love Philly Sports logo, and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment or question on the show. I had a bye week this week with Facebook, fellas, so but we're back in business.
Yeah, I heard Mark Zuckerberg was very upset with you, so he made you change your – he felt threatened by you.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking maybe we're getting so big here around the Press Box Radio Network that, Mark needed some of my money that I don't have any of. But who knows what his thinking was, but they were sure trying to get some cash from me somehow. Well, the water just gets muddier each week, fellas, as it goes by. We went into the weekend with 5 undefeated teams. We left with 3. Baylor got ambushed in Morgantown by the Mountaineers, 41-27. Who'd have thought that? And Florida State held on to beat Notre Dame, 31-27, in a slugfest game. And in my opinion, that's what college football is all about. What a fantastic game. But before we get to that, Terry, let's take a look at the Baylor game. And how do you win a game? Well, first of all, how do you be ranked in the top 4 or 5? Expect to win a game with 19 penalties totaling 215 yards. And by the way, West Virginia had 14 penalties of their own for 138 yards. Now, I tried to watch that game. There were so many penalties, it wasn't even a good game to watch.
I guess it was kind of like women's field hockey, right, where they blow the whistle all the time and it's not very fluid. All right, that wasn't nice. I shouldn't have taken a shot at women's field hockey. I apologize for that. But, yes, you won't win too many games when you set a conference record in penalties, my friend. That is true. And the game definitely was a bit disconnected, if you will. But, look, West Virginia is a quality team. And, you know, they obviously have very quality schemes, both offensively and defensively. And they've been competitive in all the big games this year. They lost to Bama in the opening game of the year. But it was very close, very competitive all the way throughout. And they lost to Oklahoma, where the score probably wasn't indicative of how competitive that game was. So, you know, going in, obviously that place is a tough place to play. It's a good atmosphere. It's kind of like the poor man's version of LSU, if you will. A lot of crazy fans, but definitely a difficult place to play. But in this game, West Virginia outgained Baylor, I think, 456 to 318 yards. They held them to 19% on third down conversions. And if it weren't for the 3 turnovers by West Virginia, this game probably would have been worse. Your buddy Bradley most certainly came up with a good plan, and West Virginia came away with a good win. Trickett and Kevin White, the wide receiver for West Virginia, who probably a lot of people haven't heard of, maybe they haven't seen much of him, but he's probably one of the more talented wide receivers in the country, and he's been dominant the last couple weeks, and those two really gave Baylor a hard time. You know, Baylor, you know, they struggled at times on defense. We've seen that. You know, obviously the penalties, undisciplined, and offensively they just weren't as crisp. And you go into Morgantown, it's no joke. And the Mountaineers, you know, they did what they had to do. And, you know, they've done this a number of times. They've kind of been on both sides of this where they've had some upsets and they've had some games where they've kind of laid an egg as well towards the end of the season. But a really good game for West Virginia, you know, a momentum kind of grabber for them as they kind of try to, you know, matriculate their way back up to being competitive in that conference. They've kind of been in the middle of the pack now for the last couple of years. But it was a good win, and they positioned themselves to kind of compete there with TCU, Oklahoma, and now Baylor. So great win for West Virginia.
Doesn't do good for my Final Four, and doesn't do good for my Heisman selection either.
Probably not.
Keith, did you get to see that penalty fest?
Hey, Terry, I liked how you said the fans are very similar. The only problem is that could have been an 8 a.m. game versus an 8 p.m. game at LSU, and the fans would have been the same.
It would
have cranked up just
true.
As much. So
that's
I don't know
true.
If you ever had the pleasure of going to a game or playing a game at West Virginia. It is a
it's a rocket
it's
place,
an experience,
huh?
Man. It's an experience to say the least, and there's no doubt about that. I played there when I was a redshirt freshman in 1992, and it was unbelievable. I mean, just the stupid stuff that you hear about, like in other stadiums, you know, them throwing marshmallows and fruit and having the red lasers and stuff like that. That was normal down there. You know, it's just a brutal place to play. They're crazy. They're wild. They're shooting guns off. I mean, they got a guy down there with a beard running around in a coonskin cap, shooting muskets off and stuff like that. But yeah, man, it's a very tough place, a tough environment to play. And you know, I had some guys who were in my ears saying, "Hey, you got to watch out for that West Virginia team." You know, Baylor's. I don't think Baylor was ready for what they were walking into. And I think Baylor figured, you know, they were coming off that, you know, we always call it the hangover game. They had that huge win versus TCU. They shouldn't have won that game and yada, yada, yada. And then they go up to West Virginia, and West Virginia just takes it to them. And, wow, big upset, huge upset. They had actually saved somebody's career up there, somebody's head coaching job for another year or two.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, speaking of that, I want to jump over to another game right quick that did you happen to see the Florida-Missouri game at all or see the box score of that game? Did either of you see that?
Yeah, of course.
Keith, I don't know if you got to see this. Missouri had 119 total yards, only 20 of them passing, scored 42 points. And they scored by interception return, fumble return, punt return, and kickoff return.
Yeah.
That was 28 of their points, and then they ran one in and kicked two field goals. That was their 42 points in that game. And talking about coaches saving their job, it is awful hot for Will Muschamp down in this neck of the woods.
Woo, baby. That seat is burning. That's magnesium that he's sitting on right now. I do not. He could actually beat Florida State, and I still don't think he keeps that job. I agree.
Six turnovers, by the way.
I'll step up there and throw that out there. You know, what's even more disappointing is that the whole team was supposed to sing the alma mater after the game and stuff like that. They're at a homecoming game, and there's only two guys singing the alma mater. You know, that's the second time this has happened to Florida. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
A couple of years ago, they lost to Louisville in the bowl game, and there was only one guy out there singing the alma mater. And this is a homecoming game at home, not a bowl game, at home, at homecoming, and only two guys singing that. That's a... You know what, if I'm in the locker room and I'm a coach and I say, you guys get your asses back out there and you, go sing an alma mater, you know, that's disrespectful to the fans, to the university, everything. And my service, I don't think he has any control whatsoever down there right now.
Yeah, it goes to show you exactly that, the program's out of control. You're dead on. And by the way, in that game, you know, Missouri with their 119 total yards had 74 yards in penalties. just unbelievable. They could have scored 42 points that way. But Florida,
guys,
six turnovers.
I have a fantastic story for you. I was up Friday night in upstate Pennsylvania, up on the New York-Pennsylvania border. I don't know where the hell I was. I'm up there watching my wife's nephew play a football game, single-A football in the state of Pennsylvania. And the referee threw a targeting penalty flag. And I literally, it was on the quarterback, I literally had to sit there and say, bro, you need to stop watching Saturday and Sunday games, all right? It's high school football. It doesn't carry down into the high school level. You know what I mean? I'm watching the game, and he says, oh, it was a helmet-to-helmet hit. And I watched the whole thing, and I'm like, dude, you got to stop watching this NFL football stuff and this college football stuff with this targeting and, you know, who can make the most penalty calls in the game. It's just like, I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? It's already trickled down to the lowest level of Pennsylvania State high school football. You know, the referees who were sitting there saying, oh, we got to keep the game safe and keep our players safe.
Yeah, and you know what? It's gonna get worse, I think, as we go.
Yep.
You know,
it's a legal matter.
I wanted to hop over to another game before we get to the Florida State Notre Dame game. But what did you guys think about the beatdown that the Crimson Tide put on Texas A&M, 59-0 and 45-0 at half? And, you know what in the world has happened to the Aggies? They've lost three in a row to ranked teams, and they've given up 47 points a game. Is A&M that bad or is Bama that good? Keith, what do you think?
One of the only games I won this week, I said Alabama was going to take them behind the woodshed and take care of them and do that to them. I think that Mr. Hill has been figured out, as well as maybe even Coach Kevin Sumlin. He may have once the Ole Miss and Mississippi State took it to them like that, I think that other teams could see what they were doing and they were going to mimic and how they were going to play against them. The fact that he, as in Coach Kevin Sumlin, being shut out is just unbelievable to me. I mean, you could say it was a beatdown behind the woodshed, all that stuff, and it was a huge, huge loss and stuff like that. He was shut out. That is going to hurt him. Because he is the offensive guru of our generation, of this generation right now, in his offensive plays and how he coaches and stuff like that. I think I had a coach one time. He said, you got to stay one step ahead of the posse. That's an old coaching analogy. You know, you got to self scout. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, you got to be one step ahead of the posse as an offensive coordinator. You know what? I think the posse has caught up to Kevin Sumlin.
Terry, what was your thoughts on that blowout?
Yeah, I mean, to your question, the direct question, I think Texas A&M was never as good as I think, a lot of people thought they were. I mean, even us, you know, at the beginning of the season after the South Carolina game, we didn't really know, you know, much about either of those two teams. So now we know South Carolina is not a very good football team, and now Texas A&M has been exposed, and look, they just can't handle some of these teams in the trenches. I mean, they're just being dominated up front. Alabama is a really good football team. We're going to get into the one-loss teams at the end here. But they definitely, I think that Texas A&M kind of helped propel them to this, this position that they're in now where everybody, you know, feels Alabama's back. And, you know, just a week ago, they probably should have lost to Arkansas. So, you know, I kind of land somewhere in between where I think, you know, it's partly due to the fact that Texas A&M isn't who we thought they were, and Alabama probably isn't as bad as they were against Arkansas and maybe some of these games where they didn't, you know, play up to par, but they're probably not as good as 59-0 over any of those SEC teams. But in this game, it just didn't go very well for the Aggies. Like I said, they just get beat up in the trenches. The quarterback, as Keith pointed out, they obviously figured out a lot of their tendencies and what they like to do, and they're not executing well at all. They're not running the football. Kenny, the thrill, I guess that's done with. I don't think they're going to have much competition in trying to acquire the rights to that slogan there. But, yeah, it was impressive. Alabama has always been one of the best teams on paper, personnel-wise. So it's not shocking that they would dominate A&M, especially there in the trenches. But 59-0 is pretty sad. And as Keith pointed out, for Kevin Sumlin to be shut out for the first time in his coaching career is a big deal. It really is, and there's a lot of recruits out there that will look at that and look at the last few weeks for Texas A&M, and, you know, it'll start to play on them a little bit. And we'll see. The Aggies have some big games ahead of them. Maybe they can bounce back. But an impressive win for Alabama, and I kind of fall in between with Texas A&M being probably, you know, a lot worse than we thought they were, and Alabama maybe not being quite as good as they looked in this game, but maybe somewhere in the middle.
Well, Keith, I'm kind of with you, and you know, if I'm Coach Sumlin, I come in Sunday morning, and I'm saying, okay, where do I start? Do I start with the 47 points a game I'm giving up 3 weeks in a row, or do I start with the zero that got thrown at me on Saturday? he's got to pretty much reevaluate the whole situation and get this thing straightened out pretty quick. And I actually heard one of the national people saying, who needs to do the most explaining, Kevin Sumlin or Will Muschamp?
Oh, Will Muschamp.
Pretty good thing. Did you guys see, by chance, the halftime interview with Nick Saban?
No, I didn't catch that.
It was, hey, coach, you're up 45-0. What are you going to do with that? Well, we got to get ready. It's a 60-minute game and this and that. We got to play 60 full minutes. Dude, you're up 45-0 or 49-0. Let's settle down a little bit with the whole machismo thing. Nick
followed that up with his blasting of the media and the fans who were unhappy with his 1-point win. He fixed that this week.
You know, there's people in the business that you sometimes don't like, but who win, he's one of them. You know, he's definitely.
We'll get to one of mine here
of
a little bit later on, I think.
Well,
I have one of them as well. Well, let's get to the big game of the week.
85% of the college football world is not in love with the person I think you're talking about right now.
I think so. Well, let's get down to the big game of the week, Notre Dame, Florida State. And I'm going to tell you guys my opinion, and then I'll turn it over to you. But my opinion is Notre Dame outplayed Florida State from the start to the finish and should have won the ball game. I know you're probably not going to agree with this, but I agree with Coach Kelly. I think Notre Dame got robbed on the last call of the game. And I've watched that thing 100 times, and I think that the defensive players in both cases, the two in question, because I guess we haven't really figured out who they even made the call against, both initiated the contact, and then they acted, because the guy who was supposed to be covering Robinson was lost in the shuffle, and I really think that Florida State stole that call. But with that said, Jameis Winston, you can say what you want about the kid. He can sure as heck play.
Yeah, man. I mean, Jameis, it's ridiculous. You know, he's America's biggest enemy right now. He is, you know, enemy number one right now because of everything he's going through. We mean, every week we're talking about what is Jameis. I mean, I'm trying to do this on a radio show I do every Wednesday night. I'd say, yo, what has Jameis done this week to make you mad? And that's just what it's turning into anymore. But
it's funny.
The guy can play, man. The guy is definitely a player. He's a game changer. I saw on the Florida Weather Network today, they were talking about, I think it was them, they were saying if they go undefeated, is it right for the BCS or the Bowl Championship Series to say, you know what, he got suspended since then, but they're not as good with him and stuff like that. And not fair to the team, it's fair to all that, and it is what it is, but the guy is unbelievable. And one of the best college football games I've seen in a long time. I mean, just talk about it. You think the two finesse teams, these two were smash-mouth teams. They were going at it for four quarters the other night. It was a great game to watch. You hate seeing it turn into that. I'm sure we'll get into the referee call, yada, 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 but we'll talk about that. But you don't want to ever see it end in the referee's call. But what a great game. And, you know, Jameis Winston and Golston, for what he's a hell of a player, too.
Yep.
This is a great game.
Sure is. Well, two things, Keith, I wanted to throw at you, or one at you and one to both of you. Keith, I was thinking of you. You popped into my head. That's probably a bad thing. You popped into my head when they showed Jameis Winston chewing out his offensive tackle on the sidelines.
Oh, yeah.
Was happening to Keith Collins. What do you think?
Let's just say that wouldn't have been, maybe the kid deserved it, maybe he didn't, but you don't do it in public. And, again, it just goes to say, yet again, how immature Jameis Winston is. Because he has to realize that every breath he takes, every move he makes, I sound like Sting right now. People are going to be watching him. You know, every camera in that stadium is on him. So if he yells at somebody on the sideline, they're going to see that, you know. And it makes his offensive tackle look bad. I just, you know, the kid's got to grow up.
Yeah, definitely.
Terry, what was your take on the game?
Yeah, Bill, I think you're onto something. I think ND played more than well enough to win this game in so many ways. I mean, they were the better team on Saturday night. There's no doubt in my mind. And Indy outgained Florida State 470-323. They had 26 first downs to FSU's 18. They held FSU to 50 net yards rushing, 1.9 yards per carry. Notre Dame was definitely more dynamic. They were more explosive. They were better on third down. They just didn't win the game. You know, we can argue about the call at the end of the game, and I think we would all kind of debate different, you know, merits of that call. But, you know, the truth is it actually ties into an earlier play where Notre Dame scored. There was a similar play where I think Robinson actually scored the touchdown where they ran the same pick play, or we'll call it the rub play, right? And they scored a touchdown. And at that point, Florida State obviously made them aware of that situation. And if it came about, the refs were most certainly going to be more vigilant in terms of taking a close look at that. So they most certainly did that when they came out in the set. Obviously, you know, I'm sure the refs were paying very close attention because you knew there was going to be some kind of rub, some kind of outplay, and that's exactly what they did. And the refs, you know, they stepped in and made the call. You hate to see that at the end of the game. I would hate to see it the other way as well. If they didn't call that, Notre Dame won the game. And again, I think you can debate this, you know, many different ways. I kind of fall in line with the thought that, you know, you can't do that. I mean, even if, again, you could argue who was contacting who and all. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like they made the right call. I hate to see a game end that way, especially when Notre Dame played much better than Florida State from the beginning to the end. But me personally, and I know, Bill, you feel differently, but me personally, I feel like you have to make that call in that situation. But I totally understand, and I've heard the debate many times already. But as it pertains to Winston, I mean, like you guys said, the guy is tremendous. I mean, he's a fantastic football player. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, he can do everything as a quarterback. And, you know, what's funny about him is he may be very immature, which we would all agree, but when he's out there between the white lines, he does seem to have a certain sense of poise and a certain sense of you know, real leadership qualities, because his teammates follow him. And that is a sign of real leadership. And when you have a guy when all of his players just buy into what he's doing, and he's this has been the case since last year when he was a freshman. Everybody, seniors, juniors, upperclassmen, they just bought into who he was and what he was doing in between those white lines. Unfortunately, you know, he's not conducting himself off the field in that same manner, but in between those white lines, the guy is one of the best players in college football. And he probably, if he continues on and they go undefeated again and he wins a national championship, or even if he just plays for one, I mean, the guy is going to go down as probably one of the better quarterbacks that we've seen at this level, you know, in a long time. You know, accomplished both by way of production as well as, you know, perception. And he just does everything well. You know, he's athletic enough to make plays out of the pocket. Very accurate, you know, very poised player back there in the pocket. So it's kind of sad is what it is that they continue to allow him to kind of mishandle his self and, you know, his you know, potential career as he moves on. But on the field, in between those white lines, there's very few players that execute and play at that level. And he's pretty special. He really is. And Golston, like you guys said, talk about a kid that's playing really good football right now. He's one of the premier players in college football as well. And he's been very dynamic all year. And he's a handful for anybody. He is an absolute handful. And Notre Dame's offense, the defense was always the thing that was going to be in question this year, but the defense is playing pretty well. But the offense is just, it's awesome. They get the ball to a lot of different players. They run the football well. They're aggressive at the point of attack. And Golston is just a beast. Anytime he has to make a play with his legs, he does it. He's got a strong arm for a smaller guy. He's probably about 6 foot. He's got a cannon for an arm, and yeah, he's definitely more accurate. His work with Whitfield over the offseason and when he was out of Notre Dame for the academic issues, he's definitely gotten so much better. And Notre Dame, they're legit. They're a really good team, and they didn't really deserve to lose that game. It's kind of unfortunate for them, but I have a feeling that if they can take care of business, they're going to be right back in the mix here at the end of the season, unless USC can upset them at the end of the year. But we'll see about that. But it was a good game, Bill. It really was a good game.
You both hit on something that I was going to mention as well. I thought both of these quarterbacks, as the game kind of got really chaotic in the second half and it was bouncing back and forth, both of these guys just never for a second looked rattled. I mean, they totally under control the whole entire game and just both kept making plays. Keith, what'd you think of that?
Look like a heavyweight fight type of thing, you know. The Notre Dame came out and gave their best body blow, you know, like Ali Frazier, you know, Rumble in the Jungle, whatever fight we want to try and call it, stuff like that. Because it was one of the best college football games I've seen in a long time. I mean, I was with my my wife and her mother, and they were as riveted as I was to the television watching the game, you know? I mean, that's yep. the sign of a great football game. You know, Florida State showed a lot of you-know-what. We call it intestinal fortitude here on the Philly Press Box show. And they really did. I mean, they took Notre Dame's best punch a couple times, and they just kept on fighting, kept on coming back. And you know what? When the game it finally came to an end, they took care of business. You know, I mean, Coach Kelly has an argument on the call. I'll throw my two cents in on that. But just don't make it so obvious. I mean, those guys were just flat out. You may as well put the left and right tackle out there and pass block or, like, run block is what those guys were doing. You know what I mean? They were just little guys running the combination double team out there.
It's got to be a rub, not a pick, right, Keith? It's got to be more of a rub
you're
action.
You're exactly right. You got to let him get through if he wants to get through. But, you know, but they just mauled those two guys. And, you know what, I'm not a fan of Kelly complaining about it, saying, you know, well, you know, they were in the wrong defense, and then they in essence, pretty much cheated to get what they wanted. And I'm not a big fan of that. But he's already politicking. This is the problem we're going to have in this with this Final Four thing, you know? I mean, now instead of one or two teams politicking, you got four teams available to be politicking. And I know this is a nice little lead into the top 15, you know, the 15 one-loss teams or whatever you have right now. But,
hey, Keith,
you know,
everybody's politicking. Even Nebraska head coach came out and he was adamant about the relationship between the SEC and ESPN and said that it's bad for college football.
Yeah, they're already positioning themselves for that.
Dude, I've said it since it started. I mean, the fact that people say that ESPN and the big SEC networks are all owned by the different, you know, someone's owned by ESPN. It's not true. The SEC is owned by ESPN. So who do you think they're going to promote?
That's right.
You know, and it's just
but
like,
I wanted to hit one more topic on this game before we get off it and get onto it, but. What did you think? This was my other thing I was going to mention to you guys. What did you think about the play of Joe Schmidt? The walk-on, basically the walk-on middle linebacker for Notre Dame that just kept making play after play after play. Number 38, they kept highlighting him. What in the world? That kid played out of his mind. How cool was that? From a preferred walk-on to a starting middle linebacker at Notre Dame. Pretty cool stuff.
Nice to see.
It's like Rudy.
Absolutely.
Story of Rudy.
Well, except this guy was playing the full load. He was playing the full load at middle linebacker. But
yeah,
I'm with
player.
You, Keith. I thought it was absolutely a fantastic game, and you know, it was all it was hyped up to be. I was a little disappointed it ended on that kind of play, but hey, that's what college football is all about, and it was great to watch, and I'm sure it was great for the ratings as well, and it sure mixes the pot as we move forward, and we'll get to that here in just a few minutes. Let's talk about the Owls. Oh, go ahead, Keith.
No, you know, it is, I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again, I mean, it is about the money when it comes to the NCAA, and I think that we have not heard the end of Notre Dame.
No.
You know, if they go through the year with one loss, they're going to be back in that Final Four. No way in hell the NCAA is going to allow one loss Notre Dame team not go to that Final Four. So
it works their way. It works in their favor too, Keith. It really does. You know, Notre Dame is that one program where I think you're right. If they're in that position, it's going to be hard for them to keep Notre Dame out of getting into the playoff.
Yeah, it's a national recruiting. It's a national fan base. I mean, they're going to want to sell tickets to these games. I mean, I'm going to go as far as to say the Big Ten has the same kind of juice, man. The Big Ten has a ton of alumni, so if it comes down to a Mississippi State or an Ole Miss versus a Ohio State or a Michigan State, I think they're going to take a Big Ten team over a second SEC team.
Over a second absolutely. Yeah.
Well, the first one they deserve. They're not going to take a second SEC team over the Big Ten team. And that's just, and then you know, they might take it over a Big 12 team, an ACC team, and a Pac 12 team, but they don't care. These alumni bases are huge, and they know that they travel. And it's all about the money, man. It's all about the money. If they know that they can fill a stadium, they know they can fill the Rose Bowl or Fiesta Bowl or Cotton Bowl or whatever, Jerry World down in Dallas, they're going to do it. They're going to pick who is going to do that.
All right. Well, let's jump real quick so we can get back on time here. Let's talk about the Temple Owls going on the road, getting beat up by the Houston Cougars 31-10 Friday night. That wasn't a good showing by the Owls on national TV. And Villanova, on the other hand, went down to William & Mary, won a tough road game, 35-32, and gave up 518 yards of doing it, but came out with a win. What'd you think, Keith?
I mean, the Temple thing hurts. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, we always want to I root for Temple and stuff like that. I watched that game. They were doing all right. You know, they're hanging in there and stuff like that, but they just got blitzed in the second half and just it hurt because I know we all picked Temple. And, you know, I want to see Temple do well. I mean, friends on the staff, I have, they're old teammates of mine and stuff. I say it every week. But I want to see Temple do as well as Penn State until they play Penn State. And them going out of Houston and not playing that well. And they really didn't play well. They lost their head a couple times out there late in the game. And, things are rolling in the right way for – they're moving in the right direction for Temple. But, you know, that's a game I think you should win. But they were also 10-point underdogs, so it wasn't like that was that wasn't unexpected.
Mm-hmm. All right, Terry, did you get to look into that Villanova game at all?
I followed it. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I looked into it in terms of looking at, you know, how the game played out and whatnot. And as Keith pointed out, you know, it's obviously a rivalry game, and they had to go on the road and play a team that's equipped to at least, you know, compete with them, which they did. And as you pointed out, the quarterback for William & Mary played really well, and I think he ended up with like 350 yards passing. I mean, it was a pretty good performance based on, the write-ups and whatnot. But as we talked about the week prior, there really isn't much competition for Villanova from here on out. It looks like they're going to make their way through the rest of the schedule. Obviously, there could be some unforeseen, circumstance or situation that plays a part. But if all things are equal, it looks like they'll make their way as at least one of the top, four seeds into the playoffs. And then, as we mentioned a couple weeks back, there are some really good teams, out west at this level. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out. But, hey, Villanova's a really good team, man. They obviously can throw the ball. Their quarterback's a really good player. They run the ball with multiple players. Defensively, they're a little bit blitzed this past weekend, but they played well, obviously, over the course of the season. So they're setting themselves up well for a chance to win a national title. So it'll be interesting. I'm really curious. I enjoy watching that level of football. And, once they get into the playoffs and all, there's going to be some, for a lot of us football fans, that's really quality level football. And I look forward to the opportunity to see them play. But from here on out, it should be smooth sailing for Villanova and their fans and on to the playoffs.
Yep. Well, they're still ranked number four. All right. Well, do you like shopping online? If you do, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's a South Beach shopping mall without walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com and click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the All Stores tab and check out all 3,000 plus network stores. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. You have questions? Click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. All right. Well, this is a huge week for the Nittany Lions. The Ohio State Buckeyes visit Beaver Stadium. Keith, can Penn State generate enough excitement, emotion, to be able to compete in this one, or is this going to be a tough sailing for the Lions?
Oh my God! I knew you didn't ask me this. I mean, I know it was on the sheet now, but I knew I had to confront this eventually. Yeah. I just don't see how their offensive offense keeps up with Ohio State's offense. I mean, two real good defenses with, both teams have real bad offensive lines. I mean, not bad offensive lines, just not playing well offensive lines. I mean, I'm always an optimist when it comes to the offensive line play. Penn State only has one chance, in my opinion, and that is if they ball control offense, don't turn the ball over, and they can keep their defense off the field, just long enough for them to not to, for them to catch their breath. But you know, the chances of that happening are slim and none, and Slim left my world a long time ago, in my opinion. that's how I feel about this game. It pains me to say it, and it pains me, but you know, Ohio State's just got the horses right now, and you know, we're still running the Siberian Huskies in the Iditarod Rock right now, and they're at the Kentucky Derby right now. So that's a pretty good analogy, in my opinion, but. It hurts to say it, guys. I'm telling you.
Well, at the end of the show, we're going to have to pick that game anyway, Keith, so I knew you were going to be in a little bit of predicament one way or the other.
I'm breaking my own cardinal rule. I'm actually going to pick against Penn State for the first time in over 4 years. You know,
well,
it hurts.
It hurts. I don't think you'll be alone.
Yes. Oh, boy.
No.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, listen. We touched on this briefly last week, and we've touched on it a little bit earlier tonight. I want to go through this. I'm going to give you some details here. So you guys chew on this a little bit. This is the number 4 through 19 teams presently in the country. All have one loss, except for number 17, Oklahoma, that's still hanging around somehow with two losses. So that's 15 teams, okay, that have one loss. So I guess I'll start out with a question. How can Notre Dame, that we pretty much agree, outplayed number 2 Florida State, and now they're considered the fourth best one-loss team? So obviously there's more losses that are going to sort this thing out and clear up a whole bunch of this mess, but I want to run this stuff by you guys, chew on it for a minute as I'm talking, and then we'll get to it. Right now the SEC has 4 of the 5 top spots. A few more details to chew on. Number 4, Alabama, lost to number 11, Ole Miss. 23. This was what they were ranked at the time of the games. Then number 11, Ole Miss, 23-17 on the road. Number 5, Auburn, lost to then number 3, Mississippi State, 38-23 on the road. Number 6, Oregon, lost to 31-24 to unranked Arizona at home. That's an interesting one. Number 7, Notre Dame, loses to number 2, Florida State, 31-27 on the road. Number 8, Michigan State, lost to then number 3, Oregon, 46-27 in week 2 on the road. And number 9, Georgia, lost to then number 24, South Carolina, 38-35 on the road in week 2. And then TCU lost last week to then number 5, Baylor, 61-58 on the road. So everybody pretty much lost road games. Oregon lost to an unranked team. So what do you guys make of this? Terry, let's start out with you. How would you sort this thing out right now if they said, okay, here's the top 4 through 10 and with the teams that I just gave you? Would you shuffle the deck any?
Oh, definitely. It's obviously chaos, my friend, and I think it's a little early to determine. You know, as you pointed out, a lot of these teams are going to play each other. There's going to be a lot of attrition here just by way of matchups. So, but for the sake of this exercise of you know, taking a look at this and objectively kind of making sense of this, I think the Arizona win over Oregon, you know, being that it was at home for Oregon, that's tough to swallow. But Arizona did jump to number 10 after that, and they were undefeated at the time. And they are a quality team. Are they the 10th ranked team in the country? No. Are they a top 25 team? Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a bad loss. But for Oregon, I think, you know, with them beating Michigan State in the manner in which they did, even though it was early in the season and it was at home, I think that's that most certainly helps their cause. But the way I would look at this is I would sort it out this way. I think you have to look at Notre Dame, Alabama, Oregon, and Michigan State as the best one-loss teams at this point. In my mind, just based on, you know, what we know of them, their personnel, how they've looked so far, the eyeball test, you know, these are the teams in my mind that have separated themselves in this discussion. Now, TCU looks really good.
Excuse me just a second. Who did you say? Alabama, Oregon, Michigan State.
Notre Dame and Michigan State.
And Notre Dame. So you left Auburn out. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, well, okay. Yes, and there's a reason for that. They didn't play well against Kansas State, and that was their second toughest game that they've had so far. Kansas State's a quality football team, and we obviously know it's a tough place to play as well, but I haven't really been quite as excited about them. And, again, all we can go off of is, you know, those things I kind of mentioned, which are we know what their personnel looks like, we know what they've looked like, the eyeball test, and we're going to get more into this as we move along here in the weeks because they're going to have to play some teams that we feel are pretty darn good teams. So I do think Notre Dame, Alabama, Oregon, and Michigan State are a little bit more balanced than Auburn at this point, and I think Auburn's not going to be in the conversation anyway because their schedule is so brutal. So I'm just going to remove them from the equation at this point. But I like those four teams, and now TCU looks good. They have one loss, and they honestly, they probably should be undefeated, and they should be in the conversation for the playoff. But because they're a Big 12 team, because they're TCU, they're going to need, you know, a minor miracle at this point for them to probably get in there. But they most certainly would deserve it just based on, you know, what they've done so far. Georgia obviously is playing really good football. Baylor still is, you know, kind of in the mix. And I like Ohio State as well. I think Ohio State is kind of a dark horse, if we can even say that. It's funny how an SEC team can jump from 20 to 8 and everybody perceives them as, you know, this great team. But Ohio State continues to plug along, but they haven't really been moving up the board so much. I mean, they are by way of attrition, like we said, but they, you know, they're not making those leaps, and they've been pretty darn impressive over the last couple weeks. So it's just interesting to see how the dynamics of, you know, perception, especially, you know, amongst, you know, most of the national guys. But I think Ohio State, basically the winner of Ohio State and Michigan State, has a really good chance of being in that conversation for the playoff, as well as the winner of the Pac-12, and we'll get into this later. But the way I look at it, the top four teams out of all those 15 that are kind of in the mix at one loss, to me it's Notre Dame, Alabama, Oregon, and Michigan State at this point.
Keith, how are you making sense of all this?
It is crazy, no doubt, in my mind. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, what's the old analogy? I mean, this is back, you know, 20 years ago when I was playing, 30 years ago. It's not who you lost to, it's when you lost. If you get your losses out early in the season, it's sort of how this is like being turned out, is turning out to be, in my opinion. You know, it's like, hey, they lost early in the season, but they've won 11 games since, and I'm like, it doesn't matter. You know, it shouldn't matter. That it should be who they lost to, when they lost to them. I mean, you know, and you can go through the list. I mean, first of all, there's going to be so much more carnage that's going to go on. That whoever does, if they do go undefeated to win a national title, they more than hell deserved it. There's no doubt. I mean, if Mississippi State, Florida State, or Ole Miss can run the table with the schedules they have left, well, maybe not Florida State as much, but Mississippi State or Ole Miss can run the table. I mean, I think Florida State is a lock. I mean, they're going to be in it, even as a one-loss team, in my opinion, because of who they beat and who they really have left. I mean, but it just drives me crazy, man. It's the SEC, you know, they're just up and down. Like, how Notre Dame, you know, Bill, you pointed this out earlier in the week, how Notre Dame was behind all these teams just drives me crazy. I mean, they were with heads and shoulders. They played every play, every minute of that game. We're winning that game until 50 seconds to go in that game. Should have won the game to the number one team, the number two team in the country, and they get knocked back three or four pegs behind other teams. I mean, Oregon, Auburn, I can see Alabama. I understand. I think I personally think that Alabama is the best team in the country. Said it before, I'll say it again. But I mean, there's no way that Oregon should be ahead of Notre Dame. No way that Auburn should be ahead of them. And then I see that USA Today has Michigan State at 5. I mean, crazy. Notre Dame is better than all those teams. I mean, it drives me crazy to say it, but it is what it is. You know, it's just...
I got to chime in there, Keith, for one second. Now, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said, but I don't necessarily know if Notre Dame is better than Oregon. And the reason why I say that is because I think Oregon has also played some really difficult teams, and the Pac-12 is a tough conference, and they'll play more difficult games. But Notre Dame didn't look so dominant against a few teams. What about North Carolina just a couple weeks back? And I know it was a hangover game, and, you know, you can make excuses. But there's been a couple instances this year where they haven't been quite as dominant. So as it pertains to them being where they're at now, that's a product of them really just losing this past weekend. That's really what it comes down to. You mentioned it yourself – you mentioned it yourself about sometimes it's where you lose, you know, the timing of it. And I think that's really what it speaks to at this point. But I wouldn't necessarily say that they're better than Oregon. I mean, it's an opinion. But I think Oregon's, you know, pretty darn good. And I think, you know, that loss to Arizona is impacting how people perceive them. But, you know, they're a quality team. And beating Michigan State the way they did to me is that speaks a lot louder than a loss to, a quality team like Arizona. But that's me. That's an opinion.
Well, here's a thought for you. Let's just say that something happens with this whole Jameis Winston situation one way or the other, and he ends up not playing, and Florida State ends up losing. Mississippi State has to play Ole Miss and Alabama. Alabama has to play Auburn. Auburn's got a tough schedule. I mean, all five of these top five we're talking about could be gone at somewhere. We could be talking about a whole other group here before right after the Egg Bowl.
Well, Bill, I think you and Keith kind of are mentioned this. I think Notre Dame will be in the conversation, and if they don't make the playoff, the only way Notre Dame doesn't make the playoff is if Notre Dame loses to USC in that last game. That's the only way. I think they'll win out. I think that game will be the only game where they have a chance. They have to go on the road. They're a better team than USC. They should win that game. If they win that game, I have a feeling they'll be in the playoff along with Notre Dame, and then we'll pick and choose between the SEC, Pac-12, and Big Ten. But I think, Keith, I mean, you're right. I mean, you guys are right about Notre Dame. They're a really quality team, and with their schedule, if they win out, they will be in there for a variety of reasons. But, yeah, so we'll see how it plays out. I mean, they're going to have to beat USC that last game, but they should. I mean, they're a better team.
And when it's all said and done, the SEC could still end up with two losses.
It could. Definitely.
Because it, depending on what happens, if whatever's going to play out in the West with all those teams beating each other and Georgia cruises through and gets to the championship game and then they were to get knocked off by whoever comes out of the West, now everybody in the SEC's got two losses. Then what are you going to do when you have Michigan State or Ohio State, who's going to have one loss, whoever wins that game probably? Notre Dame would be sitting there at one loss. Oregon could be sitting there at one loss. And
well,
TCU or Kansas State or whoever's going to come out of that conference could have one loss. It's really going to be a mess before it's all said and done.
Well, Bill,
carnage.
Yeah, carnage. But you know, we
carnage.
Had one of the members stepped aside here this week. Archie Manning stepped aside and removed himself from the committee for this year. He'll be back next year. But I think as we pointed out earlier, there's an interesting member that's not actually officially on that list, but most certainly will be a part of the conversations, and that is ESPN. They will be a part of those conversations. So although we've, you know, a couple of us have said that we don't think the SEC is going to make the Final Four, I think we're kidding ourselves. There will be an SEC. The SEC team could have four losses, and I bet you they're going to be in that playoff this year. No, seriously.
Well, you're probably
seriously.
Right. I was, if we had enough time, I was wanting, and so I will go ahead and throw it out. I was going to mention about the Archie Manning thing, and not as much that it's him, but just the fact that they lost a member, which now makes it 12 members, and there's no tiebreaker system set up. So if they vote however they vote, it's going to be, and it comes out 6-6, they keep voting and doing, talking until somebody changes their mind. That's going to be interesting if it comes down to that.
ESPN will change their mind.
Oh,
you,
no
so
way.
You, they're the big 13th,
no.
right?
They're the 13th member.
Hey man,
no,
I'm being humorous.
I'm being humorous, obviously, but yeah, I mean, like you said, Bill, they're going to vote. They're going to re-vote. They're probably going to. It'll be like being like, you know, part of a jury. They're going to sit there and they're going to make cases. You know, their points, and eventually someone's going to cave, and you're going to get your Final Four. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting look. The human element is going to be the most interesting thing because. Obviously, you know, for those of us that are also NCAA basketball fans, you know, there's always four or five or six deserving teams that don't get in. And that conversation is most certainly going to happen this year with the football playoff. There's going to be a number of teams that we're all going to sit there and say, well, I mean, you really could make an argument for them being in there. So it's not going to be perfect. There's just no way for it to be perfect. There's four spots with five power conferences. I mean, that's just it's not a good setup.
All they did was double their anguish.
Yeah, you're right.
It used to be two teams. Now it's four teams complaining about it, you know? Well, we're going to have Urban Meyer going on television 4 months from now complaining that he did when he was in Florida. You know, it's just all they've done is take it from there was always one guarantee, you know, they're undefeated, and then who was going to face that undefeated team for the national title? Now there's four spots open.
Yep.
You know, they've just made so much more grief for themselves, and as usual, it's what they do.
That's right.
Do you remember at the beginning of the year where I said that I wanted to see SEC teams be left out because I think that would be the quickest way to 18th? I don't think it's going to matter. I think there's going to be so much backlash with this that I have a feeling that we're going to go to 18 in the next 5 years. I believe that.
I think you're right. All right, well, let's go on and talk about last week's picks. And, Keith, sorry, big fella. But we're starting to get a gap.
If you want me to.
Well, we had the Temple-Houston game. We all took Temple. We all took the loss on that. Villanova, William & Mary, we all took Villanova, so we were winners. Kansas State at Oklahoma, we all took OU, and we were all losers there. Texas A&M at Alabama, we all were on the Tide, and we all won there, so we were good. Then comes the separation. Oklahoma State at Texas, at TCU. You guys both took Oklahoma State. I took TCU, so I picked up a win there, but then turned right around and gave it back as Notre Dame, Florida State. Terry was the only one that took Florida State. Keith and I took Notre Dame, so Keith and I take losses there. And then, you know, the week special with Rutgers at Ohio State, and nobody took the bait. We all took Ohio State, and it's a good thing because they crushed Rutgers. So for the week, I go 4-3, Terry goes 4-3, Keith goes 3-4, which now makes the total record so far, Bill at 36-14, Terry at 33-17, and Keith at 31-19. But that could change any minute because we got more games to pick, and there's some tough ones again this week. I threw a couple in here just because they look like they might be pretty cool games, and figured we'd take a look at them. So are you ready? Terry, I think you're the leader this week. You go first, I believe, and then I go second, and then Keith
is
back.
No problem.
Number 13,
so,
Ohio State at Penn State.
Yep. Going to be an awesome atmosphere, most certainly 8 o'clock game Saturday night. I think the circumstances, the environment will propel Penn State to, even though it doesn't look good on paper, to be really competitive in this game for a while. But as Keith pointed out so articulately, Ohio State is just, you know, they have too many horses and they're just a better team. So eventually they'll win that game and probably hit around the number of 13 or 14 points. But so I'll take Ohio State, but it should be a fun game to watch.
Big fella?
Go with your heart.
Go with my heart. That's the only one. I'm honest to God, dear. I'm telling you, I'm looking for something to. I don't understand the 13-point spread. I don't get it. I don't know where it came from. I don't know how a Rutgers was 22.5-point underdogs to Ohio State and Penn State's 13. You know what I mean? It's just.
Happy Valley, my friend.
Yeah, really, the Happy Valley, the white out at night. And I just don't see the offensive line standing up against Ohio State's defensive line. But the only thing that's keeping me in this game is Penn State's D-line versus Ohio State's offensive line.
Yeah.
Now, if we give them short fields and this and that, like I told you before, I'm a rational man, but I have to make stranger. I have to jump down on a line right now. I'm going to go attack me. Because I know Bill's going to go with Ohio State, and I got to make up some games here.
So you're going with Penn State. That a boy.
Oh, I can't
right.
do it.
I have to go Buckeyes, and it kills me. It just kills me, too. All right, Temple at UCF. Terry.
Oh, UCF. UCF. Sorry.
I'm on UCF myself.
There we go, making up the ground. Let's go Temple Hall, baby.
There you go. You're either going straight up or straight down, right, brother?
This is
all
true.
Right, Morgan State at number 4, Villanova.
I'll take Villanova. They're going to cruise.
I'm taking Villanova.
Cruise.
Villanova.
All right, here's a few interesting ones. Number 3, Ooh. Ole Miss at number 24, LSU. Terry.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb. I know. I'm going to take the crazy fans at LSU. They played well against Kentucky last week in a 41-3 win. Ole Miss is legit, though. Ole Miss's defense is really good. In some ways, this is kind of me trying to make up ground on Bill as well. So I'm going to go LSU in an upset over Ole Miss, and I'm going to go with the atmosphere there at LSU as the main factor. So I'll take Baton Rouge. I'll take LSU over Ole Miss.
Well, I'm going to go with Ole Miss just because LSU's already let me down this year. And it is crazy at Baton Rouge, but I just don't think LSU can play enough defense to handle Ole Miss. So I'm going with the Rebels.
I'm going to go with the LSU Tigers.
Yeah, there you go.
Ole Miss doesn't know how to win games yet, in my opinion. They're due for a big letdown, and I think this is the week. They're going to get jumped.
Oh, there we go. All right. How about number 20 USC at number 19 Utah? What in the world kind of game is that?
Do I get to lead with this? No.
Yes,
I won't take up. I'm not going to take up too much time. I know we don't have a lot of time. I'm going to take USC, but this is it's going to be a really good game. Utah's a really good team. They get after the passer. As UCLA knows, with 10 sacks, they also have a very good running back in Booker. The atmosphere there will be pretty electric as well. But I think Sark and USC, you know, outside of that Hail Mary and that debacle at Boston College, I mean, they could be right in the mix as well, even with a depleted roster. So I'm going to go ahead with my boys and go USC in a very, very tight game at Utah.
I'm going Utes at home.
Whoa, baby. I'm going with my Trojans, and they're still in my Final Four, correct? Are they still there? I don't know who I think. Every week I change, so I still think
well,
the USC.
I think as we're going with our picks, either I won't even have to pick for next week, or I'm going to be on the bottom, one or the other. All right, number 22, West Virginia at unranked but 5-2 Oklahoma State.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good one. I'm going to go ahead and go with that's a tough one. I thought about this one. This is the toughest one of the week, I think. Oh, man. I'm going to go West Virginia. I'm going to go West Virginia to beat Oklahoma State at home.
Well, I'm going Cowboys.
Yeah.
At home.
Well, didn't a couple of their players just get arrested last night over the weekend for falling asleep in a drive-thru is what I saw this morning?
That's true. That is true.
That's a proudly determined team right there. West Virginia's coming off 1,000 couches being burned on their campus, so I'm going to go with the Mountaineers in this one.
Okay. this will be fun. All right. Now about 5-2 Maryland, who's playing awful good ball, at 4-2 Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. I mean, can they complete enough passes? Can they complete enough passes in the pass game to win this game? I don't know. No, I'm going to go with Wisconsin. I'm going to take Wisconsin at home.
I have Wisconsin at home as well.
I have Wisconsin taking Maryland behind the woodshed and saying, you know what, this is what the Big Ten football is all about. I don't think Maryland's had that welcoming party yet.
That's good.
I think they're going to get it.
That's good.
I am with you. Well, listen. Next week, we'll get back to talking about our Final Four since we don't have too much time left today, and we still have – I still have to replace Baylor somehow. But before we get to close here, I wanted to jump off the football subject, and since tonight, in about 9 minutes, they throw the first pitch of the World Series. Who do you guys like?
That's a great question. Since I went first with football, I'll go first with baseball as well. That's a great question. You know, the Giants just seem to find a way. When you look at that roster, do you ever say to yourself, this is a World Series roster? I mean, you never do. And Kansas City's kind of in the same boat, but Kansas City is playing really good baseball, really, you know, really fundamental baseball. They run the bases well. They play like a National League team. I like Shields. I like the younger staff that they have. I think they just have a bit of enthusiasm here leading up to this. San Francisco's been here 3 times in the last, 4 or 5 years. I'm going to go with Kansas City to beat San Francisco and win the World Series.
I am taking the Kansas City Royals as well, but I think it's going to go at least 6, if not 7 games.
I think we're seeing a dynasty right now in the San Francisco Giants. This will be the third World Series in 5 years, in my opinion, is what I'm thinking. They won 10, 12 of them now, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's crazy to think about it, but they just play well this time of year. That's just how it is. And, you know, I think that much as I'd like to see Kansas City winning a series because of how they're playing and, you know, they haven't been in the World Series since 85. Reminds me of the Phillies back in the day, but it's just not happening. So I think Giants are going to take care of it.
You're going Giants. All right. Well, that brings us to the top of the hour. I'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and the goon, Keith Conlon, for their great insight. We'd like to remind our listeners that we'll be back next Tuesday night, October 28th at 7 p.m., to talk about last weekend's games as well as the upcoming week. You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show.